Thank you again on behalf of all the conference organizers for the way you have been so attentive to this call, to this passion, to this burden, to make the Lord known to the nations. And certainly there are many peoples on the continent of Africa who need the gospel. And I can't think of anyone better to talk to us about opportunities in Africa than our speaker this afternoon. You heard him preach, was that last night? Yeah, it's like being inside the TARDIS at this place, man. You just, you know, it's bigger on the inside and you don't know what time it is outside. So on Saturday, you heard from our brother on Saturday night, thinking about the death of deaf and the death of Christ. He's the pastor of Kobata Baptist Church in Lusaka, Zambia, and the Lord's just doing extraordinary work there. And come, brother, tell us about opportunities in Africa. Conrad Mbewe.
Well, it's good to see a number of you interested in missions in Africa. And as has already been said, I hail from there. I've basically been born, bred, grown up, educated in Zambia, which is three countries north of South Africa. You've got South Africa itself, then Zimbabwe, and then Zambia. And most people mistake Zambia for Zimbabwe because Zimbabwe has a lot more public and media profile. Our own country is a bit on the sort of quiet, sheepish side and is hardly ever in the press. I've traveled quite a bit across the continent, and so as I speak about missions opportunities in Africa, bear in mind that that's really where I come from, that's where I've grown up, and just recently I was in West Africa, in Nigeria, and then just this year alone, I've also visited Mozambique, which is Portuguese, and Malawi, which is next to us, South Africa, of course, Kenya, and so on. So I have a little bit of Africa on my fingertips. I'm hoping that the way we'll proceed in this breakout session is that I'll only speak for about 30 minutes, and then I'd like to open up for questions for another 20 to 25 minutes. The reason being, as I hope to show in a few moments, Africa is a huge place. It comprises many nations. And to try and bring all that together into 1 hour is clearly impossible. Then also we're thinking in terms of the approach, which is a biblical approach. And it's important for us to at least have that on our fingertips as we're thinking about missions as individuals. And then I hope to point to a few areas that you could be thinking about in respect to this. Okay, so that's the way we will proceed, and I would not want to take up any more of your time. I have deliberately put on this jacket because my sweater seems to be a distraction. All right, it seems you get the message. You get the message. In terms of a bit of data on Africa, I'm basically just peeping at Wikipedia here and pulling out a few items that will be of interest to all of us. One of the reasons why we really ought to be interested in the work in Africa is because of its missions potential. Those who are involved in missions will tell you, at least as experts, missiologists, that Africa stands on the eve of becoming probably the greatest missionary sending continent before long. And so clearly, whatever we can put in at this time to prepare the African church for what seems to be the next phase on God's agenda, we will be very relevant to a generation that is yet unborn. It is the world's second largest continent and also second most populous continent. It has a population of 1 billion people, estimated from this year. And most of the population is on the younger end of the spectrum. So you're really ministering when you come there to a lot of young people. The other bit that I thought I could mention about it is that it comprises a number of official languages. You have English, Portuguese, you also have French, and so on. But it also has a lot of tribal languages, so many that I don't have the figures on my fingertips. But Zambia alone, where I come from, has at least 70 dialects. And then they can be grouped in at least 12 or so major languages. So invariably, when you're thinking in terms of Africa, you're thinking in terms of that much diversity. And then it has about slightly over 50 nations. That in itself is a challenge because it's not like crossing from one state to another, as it is in the United States. You invariably have to go through all kinds of immigration and customs requirements in moving from one place to the other. And so you have to do enough homework while you are still here as to which country you think the Lord wants you to serve in. You can't just cross over and then start skipping from one place to the other. I think those are the main points I wanted to mention in terms of the geography, the demographics. A bit of the history might also be helpful. And like yourselves, having thrown off the shackles of colonialism a few hundreds of years ago, for Africa, we're really talking in terms of just one generation. It's all happened in the last 40 to 50 years. And as a result, there's a greater sensitivity than perhaps you might have to issues of skin color, invariably, because those of you with a lighter complexion tend to be guilty by association because of the recent fightings that liberated the African people. It's also worth mentioning that most nations would be coming from a period of civil war soon after breaking free from colonialism. There was the infighting now for power. So that's also a fairly recent phenomenon. And then lastly, still thinking in terms of more recent history, has been the problem of HIV and AIDS. It's had a major impact upon the population, a lot of poverty as a result of it, a lot of orphans as a result of that as well. But having said that, the church is alive and well on the African continent. And there's a lot that is happening, a lot of conversions, genuine conversions, multiplication of churches, and so forth. So it's a place where the Christian faith is robust. However, when you think in terms of Africa, it's important to think of it in three categories, and that's extremely important. First of all, you think in terms of the areas north of the Sahara. The Sahara Desert, that is. And that's largely Islamic territory. If you read church history, which I would encourage you to, you soon realize that although the Christian church initially was robust in those parts of Africa, Muhammad and his people, his soldiers, his armies swept through and cleared off the Christian church by and large. And then south of the Sahara, you have what you'd call the Christian South. And when you hear about conflicts between Christians and Muslims, it's almost entirely across that border. You can draw a clean line from West Africa right across to what we're learning about recently, the Horn of Africa. That line is where you keep hearing about churches being burnt down, Christians being killed in their hundreds, if not thousands, and so forth. That's where it's all happening. The reason being, the Muslims are pushing south, and the Christians are resisting, not primarily through armed struggle, but through evangelism. And the more they are evangelizing further north, the more they are enraging the Islamic population, which is then pushing further down, killing Christians, killing pastors, abducting them, and also burning down churches. Then, south of the Sahara, again, it's important to break it down into two groups. There is the cities and towns, the developed areas, some places where if you went, you would not realize that you've arrived in Africa, fairly well developed, the people themselves quite educated. And that's where a lot of churches are. That's where a lot of missionaries are operating from. But then you have rural or the villages of Africa. That's where you have less good, solid, sound churches. But that's where you have a lot of the cults present. It's a difficult place to live in if you are used to the comforts of the U.S., but it is where you have the greatest need south of the Sahara, because the people there will not normally operate in English, for instance, even though it might be an English-speaking country. You also have the absence of most of the amenities that you are used to, the good roads, running water, electricity, and so on. Even just the basics of health institutions and hospitals are likely to be few and far between. You may have one doctor for as many as 10,000 people. So clearly, that's the kind of place where you won't have a lot of people deliberately moving there to minister and plant churches. So I thought it's just important for you to keep that in mind as you're thinking in terms of opportunities for missions. The next, before I go into a kind of listing of opportunities, is just think again in terms of three different categories of missionary laborers. The first, invariably, must be the church planter. The individual who goes there primarily to evangelize, disciple, and establish leaders who will then take on the work of the churches that are planted. When we think in terms of missions, brethren, let's always have that on top of the list, because that's what missions is primarily all about. All the other things I'll speak about in a few moments are important. They have their place, but ultimately they play a supportive role. So those of you who are thinking of missions in Africa and you are thinking in terms of church planting, you would be our front rank runners, because that's what we want to see in due season. We want to see churches multiplied across Africa. But in the second place, we must think in terms of long-term supporters for church planters. Now, if we think of church planters in the category of Paul of Tarsus, long-term supporters would be in the category of Titus, Timothy, and so on. It's the individuals that then play very clear, supportive, ongoing roles for the church planters. Here I have in mind, for instance, there'll be those that would be involved in medical work, especially in places where that is few and far between. Educational work as well tends to be all important, especially, I repeat, in the rural areas of Africa. You will find that when there is a church planter and there is medical work taking place, there is also educational work taking place, there tends to be a greater attention that is given by the community and society generally to this work that has now come in their midst. It is as though the people are realizing that these people who have come really love us. They care for us. They are improving our lifestyle through the educational process, and they are also saving our lives through the medical process. So there are a number of these that we can think about. We can talk about Bible translators, for instance. That can be long-term. It can also be medium-term, in the sense that it demands a lot of study, studying the various nuances of the languages in Africa. And notice what I said, there are many. And then going on into the actual work of translation. It takes many, many years. So as you think in terms of missions in Africa, that's one category you can be thinking about. You need not be a church planter yourself. But are you in a position where you can go and work alongside church planters? Sometimes the church planters may not be from America. They may be indigenous missionaries. But you still see your role as a long-term supportive role, which you can fulfill in a number of categories, some of which I will come and mention a little more in detail in a few minutes. And then you have the short-term supporters for church planters. Again, if we can go back to the categories I gave, if the long-term church planter is in the Paul category, the long-term supporters being in the Timothy and Titus category. Then you have the short-termers being in the Priscilla and Aquila category. In other words, there is an immediate need, and you seem to be just the right person by way of training, by way of experience, by way of background. And consequently, you are there to provide that short-term ministry. One of them, for instance, could simply be student outreach ministry. Another could be in terms of a more administrative role that you can play, or a building of actual physical structures that need to be put up. And sometimes it simply involves the role of communication, the IT world, the setting up of such systems that can also be a great help to missions work out there in Africa. So ultimately, the point I'm trying to raise in putting all this together is, as you think about crossing the Atlantic and working in this vast, vast area, don't only think of yourself in terms of, am I a preacher? Are my strengths in evangelism and discipleship? But ask yourself any of these other categories that I've mentioned. Am I able to play a supportive role and find great fulfillment in that respect? What you will find then is the important point is for you to seek advice. And there will be, first of all, a number of different missionary organizations that are already functioning on the African continent. It's important for you to get onto their websites, get in touch with them, find out what the needs are on the ground so that you are able to size yourself with those needs. Please remember, Africa is a very wide continent with a lot of variety. There are places where when I go, I also feel out of place, and yet I belong there. And then also talk to your own church leaders because they know you best. So they'll be able to advise as to whether you fit that situation as hand in glove. But there are two other categories of people that I'd want you to advise you to talk to. The first would be those who are already there. And please remember what I said earlier on. The church is there in Africa. You are not going into a pioneer situation completely. There will be unreached people groups that actually need a lampstand lit among them. But you won't go very far before you find churches that are there with the people that have lived much longer than you would have lived in that kind of geographic context. So it's important for you to be in touch with such people and ask the kind of questions that need ready answers. And then also, there are missionaries that have already been there. Some of them are still serving there. Others have come back. And it's good for you to also find out who they are and give as many questions as you are able to think of. And then finally, visit Africa. There's no other way. There's no other option. You do need to get on the ground at least once or twice, get a feel of the situation there. It will still be a very superficial feel, but something is better than nothing. It's like courtship, isn't it? You admire a lady at a distance. Don't just send her an email and start proposing to her. Go across, relate, have some way of determining whether you are the right person. So that's what I would be saying as well when we think about Africa. Now, in the process, I've already mentioned a number of opportunities, and I'll just run through them simply because I still have another 4 minutes. But otherwise, I will be waiting for the questions. I have mentioned, for instance, Bible translation work is still a major need, primarily because we have so many tribal languages on the planet, on the continent, and very few of them have complete Bibles. I do need to qualify this, however, by saying that the educational systems in most of the African countries will either be in English or in Portuguese or French. And consequently, as long as somebody has gone to school, they will be able to read in one of those languages. The difficulty, however, is that in the more rural areas, although they can read that language, it does not communicate as effectively to them as their own language does. Now, if you speak about me, for instance, I tend to think in English rather than in my own language because of the context in which I've been brought up. And there are many Africans in the cities who are like that. But there are many more to whom the foreign language is still foreign. And therefore, translating the Word of God in their language is a major asset. And then, what I haven't mentioned, which is still important, is that of pastors' training. There is a saying, I'm sure you've heard of it, about the church in Africa being a mile long and an inch deep. It's true. Many of the benefits that you have in your country are rare on our end. The pastors themselves are so busy pastoring, most of them more than one congregation, that they just don't have the time to spend raising a new generation of preachers. So to have individuals coming over, taking charge of the administrative aspect of such colleges, even participating in the actual teaching and lecturing together with the local indigenous pastors is a great help. In fact, it's a great need even now. I'll quickly add to that the reaching out to the young people. Remember what I said? Most of Africa is still under the age of 30. Maybe even 25. And so youth work is a major need. Reaching out to the colleges and university campuses across Africa with the gospel is something that is needy. So if you're one of those inclined in that area and you have a natural prowess in sport, I can assure you that though here you might be collecting dust in a corner somewhere, across in Africa, you will wish you had two lives. I've spoken about medical work already, especially in rural areas. I've spoken about building projects, invariably needed there. Serving others in administration, communication, maintenance roles. I also spoke about AIDS. Invariably, we're speaking in terms of orphanages, orphan care. Perhaps let me quickly add the fact that in Africa, we have what is called the extended family system. That tends to hide the amount of challenge and problem that you have with AIDS. Because our fathers, brothers are our fathers, and our mothers' sisters are our mothers. So if my mother dies, I invariably have another mother to look after me. My own mom died when I was 9 years old. Her immediate elder sister took us, me and my two sisters in and raised us through our teenage years. The greatest challenge that we have in Africa, therefore, is not so much a shelter. It is the finances, the means by which those extra families can bring in the extra children. And so often, it's not so much establishing an actual orphanage as establishing programs that can then go into these needy areas and ensure that the children have the finances for their education and also meals. Now, that's a lot more involving than if you had all of them under your roof and you see them 24 hours a day. But those are the challenges you have to consider across there. Then invariably, one extra area that I haven't mentioned is that of education at a vocational level. And by that I mean, although many of the younger people, the children, go through primary school, fewer get to high school, and even fewer ever have opportunities for tertiary education. So to have Christians setting up places where they can learn basic things like tailoring, carpentry, the basics of accounting, and so on and so forth, just those basics, is a great message that we are seeking to meet you where your need is. So you may find that that's where your own training has been, and consequently, there's a wide open door for you to come and serve. So those are the few areas that I thought I could quickly put my fingers on. And now I'd like to pause for specific questions. I may not have all the answers, but I will definitely answer what I can. Yes, I'll repeat your question because I have a mic here. Okay, thank you very much. Yes, our own church is involved in church planting work. As I'm speaking right now, we have probably about 15 missionaries, slightly over 20 church plants happening. Some of them in the cities, some of them in the rural areas, some of them in the neighboring countries, Namibia, Botswana, and Malawi thus far. The way it really happens is that we do set apart missionaries and send them out. We have been very purposeful and strategic. We have begun with the cities, all the provincial capitals of Zambia, we've planted churches, and then all the major commercial centers, we've planted churches. All the major population centers, we've planted churches, and our idea is that these churches can then replicate themselves in the peri-urban areas and go further into the rural areas. One of the major reasons why we've done that is because of the fact that although a lot of places claim to have churches, and they are church buildings, liberalism and the extreme form of charismatism tied up with syncretism has basically sort of burnt down the landscape. And we have felt a need to have model congregations there that can then have a lighting effect and hopefully play a role as the next generation comes through the ranks. In terms of roles, therefore, that you can play, it's you remember I talked about the supportive roles. That's crucial. These church planters usually are just a man, his wife, the little kids sent out into either town or a village situation, And clearly, they could do with a lot of extra hands. They could do with extra hands in terms of people coming alongside long term. They could also do with extra hands in terms of individuals coming along short term. Depending on where they are, as I said earlier on, you may find that your giftedness, your experience, your training may fit one situation and yet not fit another. And so, yes, it will be important for you to think about that. Remember I said earlier on that the church planter may be an indigenous missionary. That doesn't mean that you can't work with them. Because the church is there on the ground, and what you need is to fulfill your own calling alongside them on the ground. So that would be my answer, and if any of you want to ask further, we can always talk about that. Yes. All right, thank you. The question being, there's a lot of harm that's been caused, and some of it, clearly, yes, being imported. So what kind of equipping should you have as an individual? I think my answer would be, clearly, the more equipped you are in terms of theological training, the more useful you would be in a teaching and leadership role. All right. However, that does not knock out ordinary Christians coming from healthy churches. And I need to emphasize that. Let me use an obvious example. Here you are. You are somebody who has come from a very good, healthy church, expository preaching, Calvinistic soteriology, and you've trained as a nurse. And you're concerned about the AIDS problem. And you cross over. You will definitely be useful. So I would not, in that sense, knock you out. There's a role that you can play in that area. I think what matters, and I'll be speaking about that in my next session, is for you to be humble enough to recognize that this is how equipped you are. Because some of the problems we tend to have on the ground is the thought that because I have come across as a missionary, therefore I am the one who's more knowledgeable than all of you. Now, that's obviously false. It's wrong. And unfortunately, as I'll be speaking about in the next session, we've had to wrestle with these issues. Because a person comes and he, where he's come from, he is of humble education. He has not been to Bible college. But is basically walking off the plane and already telling you what you ought to be doing. Now, clearly, that person won't last long because we'll be rubbing everybody the wrong way. So I think it's an issue of humility. If you're humble enough to recognize that I ought to be learning, you will in due season find the niche in which you can serve. And the local people, the local leadership there are the ones who will, as it were, lift you up. They will help you see that, look, you've got potential for this. Why don't you fulfill this role? And so on. And then lastly, I would say that please, even if you've received your diploma or degree in theological studies, continue learning. We all have to. Discipline yourself to study, because the more you learn under Christ, the more useful you are in Christ's kingdom. Good, yes.
You were talking earlier about how the long-term supporters need to help the church planters. Say you're an educator, you came over to support an education. How does that dynamic work? Like, what does that look like for the educator to partner with the church planter? Does that make sense?
Yes. I think there are a number of options, and again, you can think about it from your own context here. A number of places you might go to, especially if they are rural situations, will be in desperate need of even just kindergarten education to be provided to the kids. Certainly, there will be need of primary education. Somebody, sometimes not necessarily teaching the children, but teaching those that have finished high school on how they can teach the children. So it's almost like teacher's education that's taking place under a tree. So there are different levels there. But essentially, you are making it clear that you are serving through this church. In other words, through this church planter. You are working alongside him. You basically a Timothy or Titus or Silas coming alongside the church planter. So the church planter is the team leader. He is providing the overall leadership, and you are fitting into the bigger picture. When you go into the towns and cities, usually in our towns and cities back home, you have two clear, distinct groupings. You have areas where there is dense population with hardly any running water. Electricity is usually there. The sewer system almost non-existent, a lot of crime that takes place there, a lot of prostitution, not the kind of place you actually want to go and live. In fact, they'll advise you not to live there. But definitely in need of individuals that can go in there during the day and help to improve, in this case, the educational levels of the people. And the people appreciate it. So you are in the city, but there again, basic primary education and so on you can provide right into high school. In the more affluent parts of our cities, that's where we're now talking in terms of perhaps at the tertiary level. Because again, they will have the primary education, maybe even secondary or high school education, but after that, it's 1 to 1,000. A lot of them need to be trained in one vocation or another, but they just know a way they can get it. Again, to work alongside the church planter and provide some form of training like that becomes a great help. In fact, it's really been funny when I've come to America and found that the YMCA here is about exercises and recreation and so forth. I'm involved with the YMCA back home. It's almost all about vocational training. It'll be difficult for you to walk into one and find your treadmills and so on. Okay, so the obvious is being relevant to their situation there rather than just copying what is here. Okay, any ladies? Yes. Okay.
And you can answer in any order. The first is the need for Bible translators. Would you say that the greater need is in the rural areas or the cities? And I ask that because I heard that So could you explain more about that? And the second question, could you just talk about Nigeria a little bit more?
All right, let me begin with the first. Think of Africa as a place of great diversity. I know we speak Africa, and so we're almost thinking Kentucky. But it's got a lot of variety. And so even as we speak now, we're really generalizing. And in generalizing, I would say that in the cities, normally the language of the nation, whether the official language, whether it's English, French, Portuguese, or whatever, would be the medium of communication. However, I mentioned that in now these cities you have these slums, these densely populated areas. Usually the language there is not the official language. And yes, you will have a lot of churches there, and there might just be one or two Bibles. And I agree there that yes, if you can have translation into the language there and then provide Bibles in that language, which are affordable, because that becomes another challenge. It becomes an economic challenge. Can they buy those Bibles once they're translated? But if that becomes possible, then yes, you are meeting a real need. So even in Lusaka, for instance, where I am, the capital city, the main language is English. If you meet people in the streets, they're speaking English. If you go into those areas, they'll be speaking what is called Nyanja. If you go to that church on a Sunday, it will most likely be in Nyanja, not in English. If you peep on people's laps, they have English Bibles. But it's Nyanja that they're listening to. If they can have Nyanja Bibles, it will even be better for them, because that's the language they use. But the moment you get into rural areas, yes, the need is vast, because although they will understand your English, it sounds extremely foreign, and any semi-big word is a very big word for them. So clearly, a translation in their mother tongue will be more helpful. Nigeria, I'm not from Nigeria myself, and I've written a blog on Nigeria that's made me a little unpopular with my friends from Nigeria. It's entitled Nigerian Religious Junk. But after all is said, and you know, a lot was said, my last visit to Nigeria, which was last month, confirmed to me that what I wrote was not half of the real problem on the ground. And it's got nothing to do with tribalism or nationalism here. It's just, I think, a fact that our friends are a lot more outgoing than we are. Remember, I talked about Zambia being that sort of little place where we all sheepish, hidden away in a corner. West Africans are a lot more outgoing. Nigeria is the most populous nation in the whole of Africa. And consequently, anything that catches fire there spreads a lot more easily across the continent. And it just so happens that the syncretistic form of Christianity has just taken root there in an amazing way. It's almost indescribable. I was shocked when I was there. That's not saying that they don't have good churches. They obviously are there. I was preaching at one of them. But compared to the level to which this form of Christianity, if it's Christianity at all, has spread, it's a drop in an ocean that is happening there. Yeah. I think that's what I would say. I would be a little reluctant to say more than that, because, It might look like I'm here to paint my Nigerian friends black, but they're not. Let me just have one more lady, and then we'll have the other hands dealt with. Let's say I've got 9 minutes. Yes. Great, thank you very much. The point that you've mentioned, let me repeat it. The question is, what would you think about this idea of going into, as foreign missionaries, going into a place which is closer to who you are and therefore welcoming your ministry, than raising up a people that can go into the next phase where they are not sticking out like a sore thumb. So what would you think? And I would say to you that that's definitely a biblical approach. Biblical in the sense that if you think of Paul's ministry, for instance, they would often begin with the synagogues. That was the place that was next, closest to what they were seeking to teach. The people were already a people that were acclimatized to Old Testament teaching. And so they would basically be saying, so this Jesus, he is the Messiah, the Christ. Believe in him. And then it was from there that they would then spill over into the wider lying areas. And it's important for us to think long term as well, therefore. If you know that going into a place where you're probably only going to last a week and someone will put a bomb under your car, surely it makes more sense for you to be just a few more meters further away, raise the people who, when they are there, they are actually part of community. They speak in terms of, that's my uncle's brother and so on. Because our borders, by the way, are completely superficial. They cut across villages. And often we don't even recognize them because they cut across villages. Unless you have a river, that, yes, does often demarcate us. So I would agree with you that in terms of long-term ministry, that makes sense. I would only say that unless you strongly feel otherwise, because ultimately you are the Lord's servant, so if you strongly feel otherwise, that the Lord actually wants you where the bullets are grazing past your head, fine. And trust that the Lord who has sent you there, his grace will keep you there. But that would be the wise stepping. Okay, let's have your question there, and then I think we'll end with you, brother. Yes.
I'm just curious on what your just teaching and education on. When I think about Africa, it's got a ton of industries and resources. When I think about corruption in the political realm, how are you teaching and educating, and what's your strategy toward the political sphere of influence in business? Because it seems like business's missions, you're helping both realms of the people, the indigenous people in Africa, make a living, but also given an opportunity to have a
right. I'm not too sure I understand the question, so let me try and repeat it. You seem to be saying there's definitely a lot of corruption and poverty, and yet there are also a lot of churches on the ground. What is it that you are doing to ensure that the churches have a positive impact upon... Yes. Elsewhere. All right. I think two quick answers to that question. First of all, it's the reaching out to students. If the Christian faith is not established in the lives of the youths who are in, especially universities, invariably these will be the leaders of your country tomorrow. And it is true that a lot of missionary work began in rural Africa, because Africa was rural. When these institutions were now being put up in the cities, very few churches took the quick initiative to make the shift, to make the change. And so, yes, we lost out on quite a bit of that population. The Roman Catholics definitely went ahead of us, but I hope you'll agree with me that they sort of teach you on the outside, but on the inside, you basically are the same. So a lot of our leaders across Africa would be Roman Catholic, a lot of them. They came up through the Roman Catholic education institutions. But invariably, not having the Lord as their savior, as you and I would understand that, corruption is still having a field day. So the need to reach out to that population. The second is going beyond evangelism and actually discipling these future leaders so that they wrestle with the reality around them with a biblical worldview. And as they learn to do that in their younger years and develop these strong convictions, then you can hope and pray, because they'll still be in your churches, that as they make their way to the top in the various areas of discipline and government and so on, that they will be taking with them those virtues and those convictions. So I think that's the way that I'll put it. It's basically the church being salt and light in the world. And if we can continue with that, we hope to see a better day. I mean, it's the same basic challenge that you have out in the West with what is now looking like more and more of a sort of post-Christian era, where your legislators are thinking and teaching outside the context of a Christian worldview. There's a losing of ground you obviously are seeing, and there's need to think, how can we buttress that? I just have 2 minutes, so yes. Maasai or something. Yeah.
And my question is, when planting churches, particularly in urban areas where these people are likely to come together and interface with one another, what is the role of the church in bringing these people together? Are you planting multi sort of tribal churches?
No.
Because many of these tribes feel towards one another as like Jews and Samaritans. So what is the role of the planted church in African communities in making peace and unity between that often have enmity reaching back hundreds of thousands of years?
Yeah. In fact, really, the question is, what is the role of the church in basically bringing unity in a fragmented society, fragmented by tribal affiliations? And my answer to that question is really the question turned upside down, and it is this. It is the role of the church to bring about that unity. And where evangelicalism has been robust in Africa, tribal affiliations have not been a source of strife. Zambia is one of them. There has been so much integration because we've largely functioned in English. So though, the moment you tell me your name, I know your tribe. But the sense of this is the dominant tribe, and therefore this one is fighting back and so on, only tends to be in the more tribal churches. So if someone comes who belongs to another tribe, and yet I know that the dominant tribe here is this one, yes, the person tends to feel as a foreigner, especially because the language we are using is foreign to him or to her. But where English is being spoken, we are in fact seeing that the church is a uniting force for a people otherwise fragmented. If it was not for the Christian faith, Africa would be up in flames by today. Let's pray. Our Father in heaven, thank you for giving me this brief time with my brethren here, for their interest in my own people and the continent from which I come. I pray that as many of them have already visited that continent, that you might continue to burden them with possibilities of them spending the rest of their lives in ministry among the people there. I pray that you will equip them adequately for the work that you have prepared for them individually, and that those who may not end up there, having learned the little they have this afternoon, will be interested enough to continue to be in touch with affairs there, praying for the health and prosperity of the Church of Jesus Christ in that great continent. Go before us now, we pray, in Jesus' name, amen. Thank you.